Chapter 10. Isaiah's Sermon on the Wild Grapes. One day in the large open space near one of the gates of Jerusalem, the usual busy life was going on in the leisurely fashion of the East. Here was a group of men gathered about the judge, who was hearing a complaint. There a company of elderly men were discussing a question of politics. Yonder a man with a skin full of water was selling it to the passerby to drink. Through the gates were passing camels and donkeys laden with goods, farmers coming in from the country, soldiers going out on the king's business, priests coming from the temple service, beggars whining for alms, women gossiping, children playing. These and many more made the crowd at the city gate. Suddenly, above the hum of voices and the cries of disputants, arose a clear, strong voice. "Let me tell you a tale of my good friend's vineyard." Everybody turned and looked. They recognized the speaker. He was the eloquent young noble, Isaiah, esteemed the finest speaker in Jerusalem. And he was offering to tell a story which everybody loves, and Orientals love especially. Business and gossip and disputes were stopped. "Let us hear Isaiah's tale," and they crowded close to hear. The prophet began his story. "My friend had a vineyard on a very fertile hill, and he digged it, and gathered out the stones thereof, and planted it with the choicest vine, and built a tower in the midst of it, and also hewed out a winepress therein. And he looked that it should bring forth grapes, and it brought forth wild grapes." Isaiah paused, and the people looked surprised at this sudden turn in the story. Then the prophet continued more seriously. "And now, O inhabitants of Jerusalem, and men of Judah, judge, I pray you, betwixt me and my vineyard. What could have been done more to my vineyard that I have not done in it? Wherefore, when I looked that it should bring forth grapes, brought it forth wild grapes?" Again the speaker paused, and the people looked at him to see what he meant by so much earnestness. Isaiah, lifting his voice, went on more strongly, "And now I will tell you what I will do to my vineyard. I will take away the hedge thereof, and it shall be eaten up. I shall break down the wall thereof, and it shall be trodden down, and I will lay it waste. It shall not be pruned nor hoed, but there shall come up briars and thorns." For a moment Isaiah paused and noted that the faces before him expressed approval of this abandonment of the worthless vineyard. Then he added, "I will also command the clouds that they rain no rain upon it." They started with astonishment at his declaration, for Isaiah seemed to be speaking for God, and the people feared he had some deeper meaning in his tale. They were not left in doubt as the prophet flung out the solemn words, "For the vineyard of Jehovah of hosts is the house of Israel, and the men of Judah his pleasant plant. And he looked for justice, but behold, oppression, for righteousness, but behold, a cry." From this introduction, the preacher delivered a sermon on the wild grapes of Jerusalem, that is, the various sins of the city. The first was the real estate monopoly, so hard upon the poor. "Woe unto them that join house to house, that lay field to field till there be no more room, and ye be made to dwell alone in the midst of the land." The second was drunkenness and revelry. "Woe unto them that rise up early in the morning, that they may follow strong drink, that tarry late into the night till wine inflame them, and the harp and the lute, the tabret and the pipe and wine are in their feasts, but they regard not the work of Jehovah, neither have they considered the operation of his hands." The third was the sin of the scoffers who laughed at the idea that God would interfere. "Woe unto them that draw iniquity with cords of falsehood, and sin as it were with a cart rope, that say, let him make speed, let him hasten his work that we may see it, and let the counsel of the Holy One of Israel draw nigh and come that we may know it." It is an awful thing to sneer at God's forbearance. The fourth was the serious evil of confusing right and wrong. "Woe unto them that call evil good and good evil, that put darkness for light and light for darkness, that put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." The fifth bad fruit with its woe was pride. Woe unto them that are wise in their own eyes and prudent in their own sight. The sixth was the terrible evil of injustice. Woe unto them that justify the wicked for a bribe and take away the righteousness of the righteous from him. Woe unto him that decree unrighteous decrees, and to the writers that write perverseness, to turn aside the needy from justice, and to rob the poor of my people of their right, that widows may be their spoil, and that they may make the fatherless their prey. These were the wild grapes of Judah. Should not such a vineyard be laid waste and deserted? Isaiah declared that God would bring an enemy on the land that would be terrible in its might and fury. Evidently, it was the invincible Assyrian army that he was describing as he said, "They shall come with speed swiftly. None shall be weary nor stumble among them. None shall slumber nor sleep. Neither shall the girdle of their loins be loosed, nor the latchet of their shoes be broken, whose arrows are sharp and all their bows bent. Their horses' hooves shall be accounted as flint, and their wheels as a whirlwind. Their roaring shall be like a lioness. They shall roar like young lions. Yea, they shall roar, and lay hold of the prey, and carry it away safe, and there shall be none to deliver." The prophet closed his sermon and walked away. The crowd said nothing. The picture of the terrible enemy was too vivid upon them. They did not believe it. They considered themselves the people of Jehovah and expected him to take charge of them. But they were awed by Isaiah's striking words and felt uneasily that they would rather not hear such preaching again. But Isaiah had undertaken a work which he would not abandon. Day after day he spoke on the great need of righteousness. Sometimes he rebuked the rulers and judges. "Jehovah will enter into judgment with the elders of his people and the princes thereof. It is ye that have eaten up the vineyard. The spoil of the poor is in your houses. What mean ye that ye crush my people and grind the face of the poor? Saith the Lord Jehovah of hosts." Sometimes he spoke of the great ruin that would surely come. "For behold, the Lord Jehovah of hosts doth take away from Jerusalem and from Judah stay and staff, the whole stay of bread and the whole stay of water, the mighty man and the man of war, the judge and the prophet and the diviner and the elder, the captain of 50 and the honorable man, and the counselor, and the expert artificer, and the skillful enchanter." On one occasion, Isaiah thought it his duty to speak against the great luxury of the wealthy ladies of Jerusalem, which he felt was one cause of the oppression of the poor. He prepared his sermon very carefully. He made a list of all the ornaments, the jewelry, the elaborate articles of dress, and the accompaniments of a lady's toilet. And the next time he spoke to the people, he denounced them in scathing language. Jehovah said, "Because the daughters of Zion are haughty and walk with outstretched necks and wanton eyes, walking and mincing as they go and making a tinkling with their feet, therefore the Lord will smite with a scab the crown of the head of the daughters of Zion, and the Lord will take away the beauty of their anklets, and the networks, and the crescents, the pendants, and the bracelets, and the mufflers, the head tires, and the ankle chains, and the sashes and perfume boxes, and the amulets, the rings and the nose jewels, the festival robes, and the mantles, and the shawls, and the satchels, the hand mirrors, and the fine linen, and the turbans, and the veils. And it shall come to pass that instead of sweet spices, there shall be rottenness, and instead of a girdle, a rope, and instead of well-set hair, baldness, and instead of a robe, a girding of sackcloth, branding instead of beauty." No preacher ever made such a catalogue of female finery. It was Isaiah's striking way of compelling the people to give heed to his message and to think of their duty and their danger. Incidentally, it indicates to us the pains that these preachers must have taken in the preparation of their sermons. No man could utter extemporaneously such an enumeration of the articles of female luxury.